Welcome to Unhinged with your host, Teresa Romer, motivational speaker, fashion expert, and fashion guru.
I am your host, Teresa Romer, and we have a very, very interesting guest on tonight. I can't even tell you how I stumbled across this man, but everything I've read about him, seen about him, was very intriguing, very inspirational, and I feel that I owe it to my listeners to bring him on and let him tell his story, because I know you will be just as moved with it as I am. So welcome, Chris Hayman.
No, thank you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you again. Well, actually, we've never seen each other via video. We've only spoken.
Yeah, this counts. Right.
We've only spoke on the phone once and text message a couple times. But anyways, guys, I'm not going to really reveal a lot about him. I want him to be able to reveal pretty much everything that he has to tell you guys. So let's just kind of get started, Chris. I think you're from Idaho. So why don't we fill the listeners in on where you're from?
Sure. So I was born and raised in a town called Harrison, Idaho, all of like 318 people, where it's not so much like a family tree as like a branch, you know, just more of a stick. My family have a dairy farm out there. I just got born and raised up in that area.
Do not tell me you grew up milking cows.
I did. We had a dairy farm out in Meadowmont, Idaho, which is, you know, like the next village over.
So we already have that in common, because I also grew up raising cows and milking cows. That was my job. I was responsible for the cows. So interesting. Okay. So you spent your whole childhood on the farm?
So it was, I believe from when I was born, my parents still lived there, and then they split up when I was three, but my dad was still there until I was about 8 years old. And then moved to more of a logging area. So same part of Idaho, just down the street, pretty much.
So for the listeners, tell me what big city in Idaho that's near.
Oh, Coeur d'Alene, I guess, would be the closest.
Oh, so it's way area. Okay, it's way up there.
Yeah.
I think I've been to Idaho Falls.
Okay. Yeah, I went to the college at Boise State.
So there you go. Mm-hmm. And isn't Boise State famous for the blue football field?
The Smurf turf, you bet.
I do know a little bit about sports. There you go. Cool. Okay. So then it sounds like you were raised with just your mom for a while then.
It was. Yep. My mom is absolutely one of my heroes. I wasn't the easiest. I'm sure most boys aren't, but I know she killed it. She was going to college most of the time while raising myself, my brother, and then my sister. So,
wow.
She's ended up with her PhD in psychology, and so probably mostly with me in mind. You know, she knew she was going to have to fix me eventually.
So little birdie told me that you were in the Marines. So how did you go from being raised by a mom to the Marines? That was not her idea, I'm sure.
No, absolutely not. No, I grew up playing football, boxing, started MMA, doing all that stuff. But football was where, you know, I kind of found my biggest passion. And going through, gosh, about sophomore year in high school, started getting looked at from colleges and doing all that stuff. And then it was just that time where 9/11 had happened too. And, you know, I kind of wanted to be in the military my whole upbringing. I just wanted to be the toughest kid. And, you know, most people do, you know, most guys do. And I thought it was my duty to serve my country rather than to, you know, go to college. And, you know, I always thought, you know, I looked at it like football too, where it was, you know, I would rather put on away colors, you know, to go play than ever have a home game again.
Right. So you went right from high school into the Marines.
I did. Yep.
Mom was upset.
Yeah. At least, yeah. Yeah. She, I grad, Yeah, I graduated when I was 17 years old. I was just young for my grade. So she had to sign the paperwork too. So it was a big deal for her. She still reminds me.
No, I can only imagine after 9/11, you know, I'm sure that's any mother's nightmare is to think that her child wants to go fight, right. You know, so, I also graduated when I was 17 years old. That's interesting to be the youngest from your class. So, okay. So yeah. We get over, we're in the Marines and the next thing you know, you're being shipped off, I'm sure, to fight in a war.
Yeah, pretty much instantly. It was, we went from boot camp to combat training to school of infantry, straight to our, basically like our job for MOS training. And then it was within 9 months of me enlisting, I was in Iraq. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're not in Idaho anymore.
Nope. No. All of a sudden we were in a sandbox and, you know, nobody likes me anymore. I wasn't a big fish in a small pond.
Right. No, I mean, like that, and that's gotta be scary hearing bullets whiz past your head. And
I mean, absolutely. I mean, at the time it was very surreal in a lot of aspects. It was, you know, oh man, you know, you see this, you train for it. Oh, here we are. You know, it's real now. And you know, I think it really hit me about a week before we deployed. One of my best friends, you know, coming up through high school, and I were on the phone, and I just got done with the, you know, Sergeant Major's briefing where we had to go all like sit in a class for an hour and a half and fill out our wills, you know, our death gratuity benefits, you know, all this kind of stuff. And you're like, oh, I guess this could really happen. So, you know, so yeah, well. It's real now.
Yeah. And so how long were you in the Marines?
I was in a total of 8 years, about 5 years active duty and then 3 years reserve time.
So that results in how many tour of duties?
That was 4 tours altogether. It was back to back. My first 2 tours were only had 2 weeks in between them. You know, I just volunteered to stay longer. That was a good decision, I think, but yeah, we made it.
So do you feel like being in the Marines helped mold you into the man you have become?
Absolutely. I think, I wouldn't have known discipline. I wouldn't have known, a lot of the things I do now in terms of, you know, in terms of the grass isn't greener and, you got to work, you know, for what you got, and hey, it could always be worse, I think is the best takeaway from that. So, right. Like people will ask me, hey, how bad is that? It looks like it sucks. Hey, might get shot at. We're good. Like, let's keep going. So I'm not having to dig a hole in the sand to sleep. Life's not too bad.
So I'm sure you saw quite a few of your friends die over there.
Yes. There was, a lot of major conflict. Obviously, I was in Ramadi, Iraq in 2006. I'm sure we've heard of them now. Like Chris Heil was our LPO for SEAL Team 3. I was attached to them in 2006 in Ramadi. We'll see Jocko Willink. He was our commander for SEAL Team 3. We lost Michael Mansour. We lost Marcus Lee, you know, all those guys. So it was pretty brutal. Very, very intense, you know, the first couple tours. The second two weren't, you know, there was still a lot of loss. There was a lot more house to house, street to street than it was, you know, more or less what we call DAs or direct attack. There was, you know, where we were doing the, you know, nobody knew we were coming kind of thing.
Right. So I also understand that you are an engineer. So did you happen to become that also while you were in the Marines, or did that come after the Marines?
That was after. I turned 22 years old and just kind of thought to myself, like, hey, you got to kind of start over, you know, either any way you go. So I decided to go back to college and, you know, save my mom some gray hairs.
She was just glad you came home from the wars.
She was, yeah. She was the best too. She sent me like care packages and boxes. And my thing over there was ravioli, you know, just boxes of ravioli. Thanks, Mom. Right? Always taking care, right?
let's fast forward out of the Marines. Mm-hmm. Did you go back to Idaho or did you choose somewhere else in the United States to live?
I went back to Idaho, Boise State. Then I jumped over to Port Angeles when I was done with that. I was a GUIDUC general manager for 3 years there. I was in North Dakota for about 3 years on the pipeline, and then later a production engineer for a big company called Hess. After North Dakota, where was it? I went back to Idaho for a little bit after that, and then back up to Seattle area, Port Angeles, Seattle area. I just kept getting bigger job offers in this area.
And is that currently where you're at?
Yes.
So you consider that home now?
We'll see. Yeah. Now, Idaho is always going to be home. This is, you know, Seattle's a great area. You know, great, beautiful rivers, lakes, plenty of things to do. But Idaho is always going to be home for me.
Right, right, right. So another little birdie told me that you've been on some book covers. So how do you go from being a tough, badass Marine going back to Idaho to now you're an engineer, but somehow you end up on the cover of romance novels? Like,
just one of those guys. I don't say no to anything. There's opportunities. You only live once kind of thing. And, I was down in Las Vegas at the time, kind of just supporting one of my friends doing a fitness competition, a figure fitness competition. And I was approached by a photographer. They were doing stock photography, which is, you know, they take a bunch of pictures with you, different athletic gear, different clothing, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, sure, yeah, let's try that out. And the genre that suited me or was most popular was romantic novel covers. So, it was a surprising, right? I'm not gonna say no, right? So we had a good time with that.
Kind of goes back to the 50 Shades of Grey book, right?
A little bit, yeah. And I'm in Seattle. I mean, there's a whole thing coming on here, right? Connecting the dots.
So I myself have written a romance novel, but I didn't quite have somebody that looks like you. I cover, but you know,
it's never too late.
So has it been just one book or many books?
There's many books. I believe there's somewhere north of 20 now. It's been a little over 3 years altogether. And I never know what book cover I'm going to be on or anything like that. It's just, you know, an author will write me one day and be like, oh, you're on my cover. I'm like,
cool. Okay.
Yeah, awesome. Here we go.
So let's let the listeners, let's paint the picture. So you're a big guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 6'4", 250 pounds. Yeah.
That's a big guy. Okay. So did you ever do any fighting? I mean, like, I understand you were in the wars, and sure, you're done, but did you ever do any MMA fighting or boxing or anything like that?
I started boxing when I was 11 years old. I was kind of taken in by a family. Another ranch down the street, essentially. Ed White was, he's just kind of my idol. He's a rodeo clown. He was a Golden Glove boxer. The guy is just this stud of a man. And I used to trade him work for boxing lessons. And he taught me to box at 11, 12 years old. And then when I got into the Marine Corps, I got into the MCMAT program, which is Marine Corps Martial Arts program, and ended out with a second degree black belt in that, and went on to fight professionally for about 10 years on and off.
So nobody wants to find you in a back alley.
I'm pretty, you know.
I think you know how to take care of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to prove, right? So.
Big guy carry sticks. Okay.
Yeah.
So, quite a strange story. I found you through social media. So how does social media fit into this whole badass guy, engineer, like what does social media help you with or not help you with? Like, how does social media fit into this whole picture?
That's the thing is I'm just kind of a walking contradiction. I've always been a little bit shy, a little bit, you've always been the kind of the quiet guy, more of a listener, more of a watcher kind of person. I went through a horrible, breakup, about 2 years ago now. I just kind of wanted to, go on that journey to like reinvest myself and just kind of heal and be, be better than I was. I learned a lot about myself, learned a ton of other things. Like I was a shitty communicator. Imagine that, right? Like men, no way, right? Yeah, get out of town.
Not a man.
No, never. And so I just really focused on stuff like that. And one of the biggest things for me was, putting myself out there more. I was always afraid to put myself out there. I was always afraid to be judged or, laugh, whatever. It was just, if I wasn't instantly good at it, I wasn't going to do it anymore. It's just kind of a horrible attitude to have. And so I just grabbed the phone one day and just started, looking through things. I had a friend show me, I didn't know how to navigate Instagram really at that point. And,
So you weren't one of these people that started out with Facebook?
No, just jumped right in.
Most people start out with Facebook and gradually work their way into Instagram, right. TikTok, Snapchat, just go right for the big one right away.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was part of the journey, right? You just got to go, it's 100 miles an hour, right?
So. So I take it we not married, never been married, no children, no family. Mm-hmm. So we chose career over mm-hmm. family or just itself.
I always chose career over family. I have a large, family myself, immediate family. And I was at one point helping foster and adopt my brother's four children. I raised my younger sister. She's 10 years younger than me. And I just had kind of always been in the role of more protecting other people and being there for other people than myself. And I really wanted to, learn from other people's mistakes, especially from a financial aspect. Not to say that's a mistake by any means, but I really wanted to be settled and stable and healed and all those things before I brought a child in the world. Because I've seen what can happen if someone's not ready for a job.
Right. So it sounds like you're pretty good with kids then. Like,
love them. Yeah. Have a great time.
So
we relate because we're about the same maturity level.
That's actually a good thing. Right. So, I helped do a thing called Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And so, have you ever done anything such as that?
I have, not as formal. My father was a superintendent for a school district. And so he asked me to come down a couple days and identified there was, I think, four different elementary schools at that time. They, had kind of identified those principals that identified children that weren't necessarily having the best time at home. Maybe they weren't being seen. Maybe they weren't being heard. Maybe there was, some possible like abuse or something like that. And he was like, he asked me to step in and volunteer with him. And it changed my life in a lot of ways. Being able to, kind of step outside myself in that realm too and realize, hey, what you're teaching these kids is important. They look up to you, they admire you. What you're teaching them now can last them a lifetime. That can be that memory for the rest of their life. And so that really grew and resonated with me. And so everywhere I've been since, I walked down to the elementary school here at the end of my block, and I'm like, hey guys, I am here to help. And there was no stranger danger situation there. So it worked out, and the principal and, I told her what, essentially my, you know, my past had been in mentoring and, you know, helping out in that way. And it's been a great program here. Just kind of, you know, it's not, I can't say that it's like super structured either. It's just somebody, you know, this shows another, you know, human being that they see them, that they care, you know, that they don't have to go home and worry about being seen or heard or anything else, that, you know, I got you, you know, at the end of the day.
Right. You know, it broke my heart one time when I was Mrs. Texas. We would go into schools. We have an area of Houston called the Third Ward and the Fifth Ward. And I remember going into the Fifth Ward and doing a school that day. And I remember sitting down next to these little kids in the lunchroom. And this little boy only ate half of his sandwich. And he wrapped it back up. And I said, you need to eat your entire sandwich. You know, it's just a long time before dinner.
Sure.
The teacher came over and told me that he was saving that sandwich for his sister when he got home, because there wasn't going to be any food when he got home. And that broke my heart. Like, it literally broke my heart. Like, wow, this little boy literally is saving the other half of his sandwich for his little sister when he gets home, because he knows there's no home, you know. And so it's just amazing. And I can remember even when I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, you know, just to see how these little kids, you know, they don't have anything. You know, I can remember taking a picture of this little boy out in this rural area of Malawi. And I said, I don't understand why this little boy doesn't understand that this is him in the camera. And the lady said, he's never seen what he looks like.
That's insane. That's
there's some mirrors out here in the bush. You know? It's like, you don't realize how very little some people have in this world. It's
And so, really how lucky we are, you know, as a culture, as a society, you know, especially the United States. You know, people ask me kind of what life was like in Iraq, or what the people were like and things like that. And so he goes, I don't think you realize how lucky you are. Like, you know, if you're in Iraq, you know, if your father was, if your grandfather was a goat farmer, if your dad's a goat farmer, then you're a goat farmer. That's it. I mean, you don't have a lot of other options at that point.
Right. You
know, maybe switching the sheep or something. I don't know about it. That's
right.
It's right. They don't have that, you know, you can do anything you want. You can be anybody you want, kind of freedom that we do.
Oh, and very few people totally, truly understand the freedoms that we have in the United States. You know, when I was climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, we would drill water wells for the remote villages of Africa. And to know that some of these 11 and 13-year-old girls didn't even get to go to school anymore because they had to stay home and walk to get fresh water. And then from that, they became sex slaves, you know. And so to be able to go over there and give them fresh water and drill their wells so that the girls could stay in school, you know, it's just little stuff like that that people just don't truly understand that we don't have to deal with here in the United States. So with that said, you know, what do you want your legacy to be?
You know, I it's hard. It's, I mean, somebody that's kind of done a little bit of everything, I kind of want it to be everything. And then you sit and think about it for a while, and you really think about it, and you go, what is your legacy? You know, and what I ended up winding out of and really just kind of narrowing down on, I think more or less to just be an example. I think men, especially bigger men or men with influence, men with, you know, a certain amount of power. I mean, we all know the type, right? That they have an ability and almost like a passion to making women feel unsafe. To me, you know, and I've heard that a lot from my sisters, from other people, you know, people, you know, men just thinking that they can have what they want, that they can do what they want, that, you know, they make the rules, and it's just not that way. And yeah, I wish there was a way for me to brand myself more in and really, you know, finding a way to narrowly focus in on that, in those people and go, hey, I mean, guys, no, absolutely not. Like, we don't do that. We don't treat women that way. We open the door. We walk on that side of the street. We, you know, cherish that other human being, not only because it's a human being, because it's a woman. You know, that's what gave us life. That's what we need to, you know, respect.
Right. Do you think that comes from your upbringing, or was there a mentor in your life that taught you that? That's kind of a lost. Even I see that, and I'm an older woman. There are very few men that will open doors for women anymore, unless it's a much older man. You know,
sure.
Somewhere that's been lost.
Right, and I don't know why. I really don't. I haven't ran into it in Seattle area, and it's fine too. Everybody's welcome to their different beliefs and opinions and ways about things. But where I'll open a door, for a female, I'm like, oh, I can open my own door. I'm like, well, all right. That's noted and kind about it. But I can see where, some men would be discouraged by that, or kind of lose their way in a, I guess they call it like a masculine energy. I just don't know any better, to be honest with you. So it's just always been a part of my life. There has been, wonderful male role models in my life, and there's been some horrible ones, but at the end of the day, we get to choose who we are. We get to choose what we do. We, we're the only ones that can affect ourselves and our beliefs and our happiness. And I just don't see where we lost our way in that, right? It's something that's, a very, very big point to me, is trying to bring that back. Maybe that's my mark.
Right. So if people wanted to find you, where all on social media are you? How can they find you?
It's just one spot. It's just Instagram, IdaHome44. That's that.
So that's IdaHome44?
Yes, ma'am.
Pretty easy.
It is, yeah. Yeah, like people ask me, where are you from? It's like, IdaHome.
So before we let you go, a lot of the listeners aren't going to see this.
Sure.
They're listening, but you do have quite a few tattoos. So
I do.
Is that from the Marines or before the Marines, or just a lifelong, you gather to go? Are they
pretty much
all have meanings?
Absolutely. So everything is pretty much from the Marines. This is more of a, memorial sleeve. This is for Marcus Lee, Michael Monsoor, Steel Team 3, Soldiers Memorial, American flag, Jared. My favorite quote, what's three most important words in life, and it goes on. That was a big source for me. And then this side is just kind of the art color side.
Is it just on the arms, or does it go all over the body?
Oh yeah, I mean chest. I have a one on my stomach that we'll talk about later at some point. I'm sure a little birdie can tell you.
I ended up with one little tiny tattoo that's probably about 2 inches tall, and I thought I was going to die when I got it. I got it out of a bet, and I said I'd rather have 10 more children than have to have another one of those things on my body. Yeah, but it's in a very, a very private area, so I guess that's why it hurts. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's what I hear. That's the word around the campfire. I wouldn't know myself. I'll trust on that.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for this interview. The listeners are so intrigued with you. I'm sure you're going to gain quite a few followers from this interview. You guys get over there and find him on Instagram at IdaHome44. You're going to be quite impressed with his Instagram. Not only are you a fantastic role model, he's been on romance novel book covers. He's funnier than funny when it comes to Instagram and what he's putting out there. And you can't help but be mesmerized by those baby blue eyes and that great smile. So a lot of you are going to be so jealous because you can't see him. You can only hear him. But I promise you, he's not hard to look at on the eyes. So thank you so much, Chris, for being a part of it. And until next time, bye-bye.